Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. Right off the bat, we're going to start off with some music. It is going to be track number 12 of my guest, Amy Hindman. And when we come back, we're going to be talking with Amy and finding out how this young woman was able to embark on a career in music. Okay, track number 12, we'll be playing it for a minute or so. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Amy, The Spirit of the Deer, that song, it's so melodic. Now, you live here in the Pacific Northwest,
yes.
And music obviously has been a passion for you. And the melodic tones of your music and your ballad-type style, what made you decide that this was what you wanted to do with your life?
Well, I've just always been passionate about singing and music, and my family was very musical. And it wasn't so much of a decision as just a passion. It's just what I've always loved to do. And I decided I would like, I did decide to try to make a living doing it. And I've done a few other things, you know, along the way,
mm-hmm.
but this is the one that I have to do it. It's a healer for me, really, to just write and sing my own music. It's been very, very wonderful for me.
Now, the lyrics of The Spirit of the Deer, what inspired you with that?
The deer inspired me in particular on that song, but the work of Jamie Sams, who wrote Medicine Cards and Sacred Path Cards, and I don't know if you're familiar with her, but in her Medicine Cards, she talks about, she's Seneca and Cherokee. She talks about how each animal has many characteristics, but they take one characteristic. And deer was gentleness, and about gentleness penetrating fear. And I was living on Guaymas Island and just seeing these animals, you know, most of them every day, and deer and eagle and all of these. And so the animals themselves inspired me, and her Medicine Cards and the work that she's done did as well. But when I wrote that song, I was standing on my deck staring at a deer, you know, maybe 20 feet from me, and I was just singing it to the deer as I was writing it. It was quite powerful.
When I think of performers like John Denver, who had this wonderful way of writing music, and the music expressed so frequently what he was going through in his life. Mm-hmm. What was your first piece of music?
My first piece of music was, I was living on the Little Spokane River after college. And you know, people used to always say, well, do you write your own music? Because I was always doing other people's music, and it was kind of no. And I never really tried to write. I just waited till it hit me, and that was the first one, and it was called Nani's Chicken River Song, and it was just about leaving Spokane and the river to come to this area, LaConner.
So you have been involved in music all of your life. Your family has been involved with music. What made you choose the guitar?
The Beatles, probably.
The Beatles? Okay.
Yeah. My sister was 4 years older than I, and when I was in fifth grade, I started on the ukulele. And she played guitar, and that's what we did, Beatles music. And then we started doing Dionne Warwick and Burt Bacharach, you know, stuff that was popular then, and always sang together. And I think I had my first guitar when I was in either seventh or eighth grade that was really mine. And so it's just always been a companion in my life.
You started out with a ukulele. I don't think I've talked to many people. I probably could count it on one hand who's played the ukulele.
I know. And what's weird is it was this plastic thing, and at the top it said TV Pal Ook. And it was, you know, dark brown body and a lighter brown neck. And it looked like a piece of junk, but it really stayed in tune. And I found out since then that it was the Arthur Godfrey thing. He used to do television shows with the ukulele. I never saw them, but I did find my ukulele on eBay. I was so excited, you know, and just because I wanted one. Like, it was
amazing.
My first thing. And so I was pretty excited, and I bought it.
I
paid way more than I needed to. But
well, I'll tell you what. I think in Hawaii, that was quite a popular instrument, and I think among some musicians today, even, they like to play the ukulele. But any other place on the planet, I don't think you're going to find many people.
I know, and you know, it's a great instrument to start on for kids. I mean, it's easy to play. They're nylon strings. It doesn't hurt your fingers, and the chords are really simple. And, and I used to say ukulele my whole life until I went to Maui for 8 months. And, you know, they pronounce it ukulele. So I had to change that. But I bought a beautiful one when I was on Maui. It's a Ko'aloha brand. It's a koa wood. It's just beautiful.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Well, let's play another track. We're going to play track number 9, which is called Magic Island.
Such a brilliant color, like passion lights up the sky, reflecting on the water as another day goes by. Magic Island lullaby. Safely anchored, your spirit should keep. Just close your eyes and listen to the sweet sea melody. While the moonlight shining in the sky, guardian of
life. Magic Island. Were you in the Hawaiian Islands when you wrote this?
No. It's Magic Island Lullaby, and I was on a boat in the San Juan Islands right off of Lopez.
Oh,
and we were just anchored out in the water, just sitting, feeling the water, and that song came to me.
My goodness. Now, what would you say to those listeners that maybe would just love to be able to compose? And they say, gee whiz, you just say, when you're inspired, you just write it down, and there it is. But I'm sure that even though you get the words, you still do some tweaking with it. What would you say to someone that listens to you and listens to your music and says, oh, I wish I could do what you do? What do you tell them?
Well, I think everybody has that inspiration within them. I mean, I think if we slow down enough to be present in a moment, everybody has something. And I think if you have a passion for music or singing or wanting to play something and open a space for it, you know, I think anybody can do it. I just think that it's about being present and listening.
Well, that's a very good way of looking at it. When you, as a performer, decide that you really want to begin performing and to be able to make a living at this, what steps did you take to achieve this?
Well, I think in the beginning I would just go to places and say that I wanted to play music there, and could I audition? That's how it all started. And I think in the beginning I used to get a lot of jobs that way. And, you know, it's kind of evolved and changed and shifted over the years where, you know, I have a different vision now, but the things that I'm doing are supporting me in creating what I want. I really now want to get my music in film and television, and I'd like to, like, make, you know, a lot more money than I am right now. I think when I started, you know, I think we all played for muffins. It was sort of like, yeah, okay, we'll do that for a meal or something. And
yes,
you know, I've evolved beyond that to cash. I still give my music to certain, you know, events and places depending on, you know, what I choose to do with that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just kind of doing it. And, I mean, there's a lot that I have to do that I haven't done yet that, you know, when I'm working, I'm singing at a lot of different places at different times. And sometimes I don't take the time to get, I have a little recording studio in my garage that's wonderful. And sometimes I don't take the time to go be in it and do the work that I want to do because I have other things to do, and when I come home, I want some downtime or something. So that's kind of an issue to make room for in my life. I'm working on that now.
What would you say relative to the business side of music? Creative people often are classified in that genre. Gee, you're creative, but you haven't got the brains of a flea when it comes to business. What is it that you'd recommend for people going into this industry to understand how to work with money? Because this is, just like you mentioned, it's very important to be able to make a living, and you may have to do something else. I can't tell you how many entertainers I've known that have been waiters or waitresses or shuttle drivers for hotels just so that they could continue to be involved with their passion. What would you say to someone to be able to help them understand the reality of what being a performer is?
Well, first of all, I'd have to say that I'm not sure that I'm the one to give anybody advice about reality.
Okay.
I think I kind of, you know, do the best that I can. I do think the world is a lot different now, and people are a lot smarter with the Internet. You know, people can put out a YouTube video and boom, have instant recognition, and you know, there's a lot of that going on. I really haven't done it in a very traditional way, I guess, and I also think that I haven't had to make a lot of money in the way some people need to you know, catch up with their lifestyle. So I can live rather simply and create what I want. And I don't know, you know, I just think that when you're doing what you love and what you're passionate about, sometimes sources come in different avenues where, you know, something supports what you're doing when you're not asking for it, or, you know, just whatever. Somebody shows up and it's, you know, a good friend of yours, and all of a sudden you're on a path together with shared interests and you're supporting each other's dream. So it's kind of a mystery and an adventure. And I guess the biggest job I probably have is to take time to be in tune with who I am and what it is I'm creating. And if I'm taking the time to listen and not depleting myself with just working, guidance comes to me. And I think that's true of everybody who takes that time. And it's always a balance, you know.
Amy, we're going to play track number 6. It's titled Change. And this is on her wonderful CD. It's the kind of music that makes you think because of the words that she uses and the thoughts that she expresses. This is her Beyond the Edge CD. So let's do track number 6, Change, and listen to that for a moment.
Today it seems I've changed. Somehow the world doesn't feel the same. Familiar shadows revealed again. Sweet sorrows remembering when. It's strange how the body knows. Hidden beneath scarlet ribbons and bows are wounds of long ago. Somehow it knows. And now I see through my eyes what you might see in a different light. Loved ones gathered by your side. In the blink of an eye you might die. Walking the ledge to eternity. Afraid of dying and leaving.
Afraid of dying, walking the edge to eternity. There must have been something very special that touched your heart and your mind in such a way that you wanted to share how your world had changed. What was going on then?
I had just gotten a massage. And
a massage?
Yeah. All this emotion came up, and my father was dying. He was 84.
Oh, my.
And he was in Texas, and I was here. And, it's that thing sometimes when you get body work done or, grief anyway, obviously that will bring up things. But it was as if some stored emotion and memory surfaced, and that song just came pouring out of me, and I was thinking of his dying. And when I wrote that song, it was a tremendous release for me, and I was wondering, do I need to go to Texas and sing this for him before he dies? And I knew that I didn't need to do that because he was there, he was present when I wrote the song, and it was just a really powerful experience. I was in the process of creating this CD, and my friend Kaylin co-produced it with me. And, I was writing like crazy at that time, and she kept saying, oh, we can't do it. We can't finish it yet. You've got to put this song on it. So that song was just, written when we threw that one on again, and added it to the mix. So, yeah, it was very powerful tribute about my father. That was very
well, what a wonderful, wonderful gift that you've given everyone, because the words are very poignant in that song.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it really deals with life's realities. I mean, none of us are going to be around here forever. So it's dealing with the fact that life does change. It is in a constant process of change.
Mm-hmm.
So it's quite a moving song, and I understand why, because it was related to your dad. How long was it that your dad was able to be around before he passed, after you wrote this song?
Well, I think that was around August. He died in September. He died September 3rd. And I think I put the dates on most of my songs. I think that was August. So it was very close to when
mm-hmm.
he died. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got another piece of music, Living in the Let Go.
Mm-hmm.
And that's track number 8. But before we go to that, I wanted to just ask you a question. Do you find yourself on the road very much with your music, or are you pretty much in the state of Washington?
I'm pretty much in the state of Washington. I did go to Maui in May, and I sang at Unity Church on Maui when I was there, and I did a concert after that. But that's really the only thing. I haven't, I've gone to Oregon sometimes, and I don't know. I have this idea at some point I'd like to go to Cathedral City, Palm Springs area, and just see what kind of work I could get there and be there part of the year, somewhere mm-hmm. warm and sunny part of the year and here. I love LeConner. I love it here, too.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I you know, and just to get more exposure, I think that might be a good idea. But, no, I don't tour and do that, really.
So no wild, dramatic yearnings to play in the Big Apple, New York City, or in Boston, or over in London, England?
You know, no, but I don't know. I have a nephew who lives in Amsterdam, and he's an amazing musician. And, I want to go to Amsterdam, because people keep telling me, oh, you should take your music to Japan and Europe. They'd love it over there. And I traveled so much when I was growing up that I don't have a real burning desire to do that. But you never know. I'm just going to follow where my heart takes me. So I don't know. I'm seeing it being a bigger and bigger dream always. I just don't necessarily know what it is yet. So
well, let's listen to Living in the Let Go. That's track number 8.
Living in the let go, 'cause I don't really have to know what's so is so. Lift myself from getting low down, chop wood, carry water and roll. To roll me out of my bed, 'cause thoughts keep moving through my head, things that need to be said.
Living in the let go. You talked about the situation with your dad a moment ago. Living in the let go, that's one of the most difficult things for most people to do, to let things go. What was the stimulus for this?
I had a job for a short time, and I was living in Seattle on a boat. And I'm really not a city person. I love Seattle, but I'm a country girl. And being in the city and kind of doing this job, I wasn't real excited about. I just went back to the boat, and I was just feeling the water under the boat, and it was rocking me. And I was just kind of stressed out in my head. And so I just began to write this song and feel the energy of really the water and the boat and just letting go of this turmoil in my mind. And it's, you know, I remember getting help one time with someone, and she said, if you're ever stressed, she says, all you really have to do is listen to your song, you know. And it's true. It really did help me get beyond the stress and the tension and the frustration of that situation and just let me be in the moment and out of any idea of something not being okay.
You said you want to go forward in your life just sort of coming from the heart. I know you take care of everyday responsibilities just like the rest of us do. What is the dream for you as a performer at this time in your life?
Well, I already mentioned the one thing about having my music in film and television. You know, I have this vision when I'm quiet enough to see it and feel it, where I'm in a room with producers and directors and screenwriters and authors and musicians and creating this vision of a work of art that includes my music or my writing or something in a really exciting, creative atmosphere where we are brainstorming and putting our energies together and creating something that makes a difference in people's lives. And I think when I first released my first CD, I got a feel of something that, you know, people must experience all the time when they create something and put it out there, but I had never experienced it. That you know, it's no longer just my music. It was mine when I created it. And then it becomes other people's music. And, you know, I got letters from people or responses of how it has affected their lives and changed their lives. And it's just an amazing feeling that somebody is being helped in some way or growing in some way on their own path because of some seed you helped release. And I think that's true of all of us. I mean, I've received so much from my mentors and, you know, people who have taught me about healing and, you know, my parents, everybody who's affected my life, even the ones that weren't that pleasant. You know, I have learned great lessons and received great gifts from. And so it's about all those things. It's about improving my life as well. I mean, I'd like to not feel like there are any limitations in my experience that keep me from, you know, giving to somebody that I can't necessarily because I don't have the resources. You know, that's great. That would be great to be able to do that. But it's mainly about the creative process and creating something greater than myself and all of us involved, where there is a very big something that's part of creation that is helping all of us, you know, nurturing all of us. And that's my bliss anyway. So, you know, I think anytime you discover what it is that you love and you do it, and then you're prospered in doing so in always in abundance, not just financially, it gifts all of us. And
well,
when
I
we're
think,
not there, that's where we struggle and suffer and, you know.
I think you've said it very nicely, Amy. And I know before we close out our conversation today, I do want to be sure that people know about your website. It's amyhindman.com. That's AmyHindman.com. AmyHindman.com. Her music is lovely. Her lyrics are very poignant. And it's the type of music that on a summer day, any day, you just want to sit and sort of center yourself. It's a good place to be in your mind. She has some very interesting stories in her music that I think you would enjoy. Amy, it has been a delight having you as a guest on the show. And before we close out, do you have a quick thought you would like to share with my audience and perhaps aspiring musicians? We have about 30 seconds.
I would just like to thank you very much for having me as part of your show. And I just think we're going through very challenging times, and it's more important than ever for us to listen to our inner voices and intuition because we all have access to it. And I'm definitely practicing right now what I'm preaching because I am the one I really need to slow down and pay attention to that part of myself more and more.
Amy, this has been a delight. AmyHindman.com. Check out her website. Her music is lovely. We're going to be playing a minute, then we're going on break. Track number 3, where we're going to play, close out this interview with a touch more of her music, and then we'll be back after that.
As we journey beyond the edge, identity shift and boundaries fade, exploding Buddha mask promenade, lives redefined in this masquerade.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's our worldwide toll-free number. If you'd like to give me a buzz and let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight, I'm delighted to do exactly that. Again, 888-627-6008. Tomorrow we have got a guest. We're going to be talking about Dare to Change Your Job and Your Life. In today's environment, many times people say, I don't want to do any change. I hate what I'm doing. I don't want to do any change. Can't afford to do such and such and so and so. Well, I'll tell you what, no matter what generation you belong to, there's always going to be a risk. Nobody guarantees you anything in this life experience, and I really feel that sometimes you have to step out on a limb and take a chance. Well, we're going to be talking with Carol Kancher, and she's going to give us some tips on how we can do that. She's got some great suggestions. And then we're going to be talking about the art of convening, which is another word about communication. And we're going to be talking with Patricia and Craig Neal. Their book is outstanding. And then on Friday, we'll be talking with Thomas Luckenbill, Staying Awake, A True Story of Life in Death. Now, if that sounds unusual, his story is powerful, and it relates to what happened to him when his mother was dying. Quite an interesting experience for him. So we've got a dynamic lineup of people this week, and if you want to know more about who's coming up on the Donna Sebo Show, check out the show information on BBS, and you'll find a little bio about all of the people that I am featuring during my hour of programming. So go ahead and check that out. You'll find out what you need to know. Again, 888-627-6008 if you would like to chat with me. I have to chuckle at kids because I really think they have a marvelous way of looking at life in ways and manners that we mature adults often wouldn't even conceive of. Jennifer Turk said she was on the way to a funeral home for the viewing of a friend's father. She had a 3-year-old daughter, and of course, as you would always do with a little person, you say, now I want you to be quiet, I want you to be respectful. And she said, my daughter was so good, right up to the very end of all the activity that was going on. And then there came the moment that every parent just sometimes doesn't know exactly what to do with. And this sweet little thing of 3 years of age turns to her mother and she says, Mommy, who's the man in the treasure chest? I imagine it caused smiles on the faces of a lot of individuals that overheard her. Water. How many times do you have it during the day? How much do you feel you need to have? Are you concerned about the various reports regarding the safety of drinking water? In today's world, unlike perhaps a few generations past, we have to be concerned about our water wellness, if you will, because there are so many different items. When you have over 80,000 new chemicals that have been developed and that are in products and medicines and various components, we don't realize that so much has been dumped in the water. And it was years ago that the Germans were right on the razor's edge as far as announcing we have major problems with our water. Even though we've got filtration systems, we now have new challenges. The challenges that the Germans discovered involved medicines. It involved levels of hormones in the water. Can you taste it? No. Can you see it? No, not unless you've got a super-duper special microscope, an electronic one, that really shows you all the different variables that can be present in the water. Filtration systems have been wonderful things to have, but now we have new challenges. The leading cause of death and illness around the world isn't malaria, tuberculosis, or AIDS. Can you guess what it is? I didn't guess, because I thought malaria was the biggest cause of death and illness around the world. But it isn't. It's diarrhea. Why? It's a ever-present threat for nearly 900 million people across the globe who drink, bathe, and cook with contaminated water. Now, believe it or not, this isn't something new. This has been going on for a long, long time, as long as mankind has been on this planet. There is historical information about a Chinese general who centuries ago, for some reason, demanded that only boiled water be drunk by his soldiers. And at that time, typhoid, all kinds of things would literally wipe out armies. Somehow or another, this general knew the water would be contaminated, but if it was boiled, it would not. His soldiers did not get sick. And that's the first, to my knowledge, recorded instance of a preventative measure with water. Now, there's an environmental engineer. His name is David Mance. He developed a cheap and easy way to purify water. And now he is helping to slash the risk of cholera and deadly dysentery that causes diseases in villages throughout Latin America, Africa, and Asia. Now, Mance is a professor, he was a professor at the University of Calgary in 1988. Now, he traveled quite a bit to South Africa and the Philippines, and everywhere he went, he saw sick people. They were sick because of the polluted water they were drinking. Now, when he got home, he decided he was going to try to find something that would enable him to assist these people in an affordable way, because these people were very poor, most of them, and they couldn't afford sophisticated systems like we have in the U.S. and Europe. And he said, it's not often one gets an opportunity to make a difference in the life of people. So he decided he would take this desire and create this situation of opportunity. He used his own money, worked on his own time, and he began using sand. Yes, sand. Now, it had been used in many different countries as a crude water filter. However, they had a problem. When you pour water through packed sand, the fine grain removes large particles, making it less hazy, but it doesn't eliminate disease-causing bugs. You have microorganisms in there. So he wanted to create a permanent biofilm. Now, what this is a layer atop of sand full of germ-eating microorganisms. And it's about the size of an office water cooler. It's called the BioSand filter, and it can supply household water that's free of up to 99% of bacteria and parasites that cause diarrhea. Now, right to date, to the best of our knowledge, of over 750,000 BioSand filters have been provided free by Professor Manns in these countries that need it. And he said, we do know that it works. Now, there is a woman by the name of Carolyn Moob. She's the executive director of Pure Water for the World. She said it can reduce rates of diarrhea among small children by 45%. And village doctors said that in the past they couldn't keep enough diarrhea medicine in stock. Now they don't need it very often. Thanks to this unique filter, a woman who lived in the hills of Honduras told Professor Mab that her family no longer was plagued by illness. Clean water, the woman said, is medicine. Clean water is medicine. Now, if you would like to help provide a BioSand filter to a family in Latin America or Haiti, you can go to purewaterfortheworld.org/donation. The cost per filter plus installation, instruction, and more is about $150. So that is something that you might want to explore. So check it out, purewaterfortheworld.org/donation, if you are interested. There is so much we don't understand. I can remember when my husband and I traveled to Russia. This was in 1992. In St. Petersburg, we were warned under no circumstances drink the water. And there was this particular parasite, and I don't remember the name of it at the moment, but it was just deadly. And if you bathed with the water, they said, whatever you do, don't inhale the water, don't let the water go into your mouth, don't, you know, keep your eyes closed. And you stop and think about it. When you're taking a shower, how are you going to do that? They'd say, don't take baths, because there's parasite, a particular parasite in the water. And once it gets into your body, you're going to have a heck of a time trying to get rid of it. So it was really quite an interesting experience, and a lot of people just opted not to bathe. And you think, gee whiz, if you're taking a shower, could it enter into some other orifice without your knowing it? So it was really quite an uncomfortable experience. But the people in St. Petersburg weren't bothered by it. They had developed an immunity to this parasite. What we learned is that for over 300 years, prior to 1992, for over 300 years, sewage had been going right into the drinking water supply there in St. Petersburg. I don't know if it's been fixed to this day, but it is something that a lot of people don't realize, that illness is something that we can keep at bay with good sanitation. So in today's world, it does pay to have filtered water, and you can have your own water filtered, and then you don't have to buy all this ridiculous stuff at the store in plastic bottles. Depending on the plastic, that can contribute to unwellness in the body because of the microscopic particles that you can drink, depending on the plastic container. We have learned a lot, and we're continuing to learn more. This is Donna Sebo, toll-free if you'd like to call in and chat with me, 888-627-6008. We'll be back in just a moment. I've got something about animals I want to share with you, too, so don't go away.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna, 888-627-6008. By the way, for those of you in the state of Washington, the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair is going to be coming up this first weekend in August and running for the first 3 weekends of the month of August. And I'm going to be there. Look for my booth that has the big yellow banners with the red lions on it. I'm so excited about this event. And I know all of my free family passes are gone. They've been gone for over a week. But I do want you to know, come on out, bring your family. It is a phenomenal event. It is in Bonnie Lake. Go to my website, or better yet, go to their website, Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. Check it out. It is fabulous. I'm doing many consultations while I'm there, and there are just so many things to see. There's jousting, all kinds of good activities, wonderful handmade items. It is awesome. It's into its 15th year, and I'm telling you, we have tens of thousands of people that come out. I believe it is the fourth largest event in the state of Washington that is done annually. So come on out, check out their website, the Washington Renaissance, or the Washington Summer Renaissance Fantasy, or Midsummer, I should say, Renaissance Fair, and you will find that it is absolutely wonderful. And all their information is up on their website. If you want to get certain other details, check out my website, go into my newsletter, and you'll see the information posted there. Donna Sebo will be right here for the rest of the week, and then on Saturday and Sunday, I shall be out there interacting with all kinds of people. Okay, animals. I don't know about you, but I love animal shows. And I just have more fun. It's very relaxing for me to watch all of these different stories about animals. And I found this one about Chaser. And I think that this dog is amazing. Now, his owner is John Philly. And he's 83 years of age. And he used to teach psychology at Wolford College in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Now, his specialty was animal learning. He retired in 1996, and he's continued his research by focusing on his special buddy, his buddy Chaser. Now, this is a black and white border collie. You might have seen him on television. He's 7 years of age. This border collie, who is considered one of the most intelligent breeds, dog breeds on the planet, knows more than 1,000 words, and most people know anywhere between 10,000 and 20,000 words. So Chaser is really something. Now, he worked, Professor Philly worked with his dog Chaser 4 or 5 hours a day. And what he did, he'd show her an object, a toy, give it a name, and repeat it until Chaser understood the association, not unlike the way you teach a child. Well, Chaser got it. And he would learn one or two proper nouns a day, and in time could distinguish between more than 1,000 objects. I've got a photo of him here with all of these things stacked up in front of him, and he's sitting right on top of it. He's just adorable. And he showed, Professor Philly did, that Chaser was capable of rudimentary language and understood the relationship between nouns and verbs, like fetch, paw, and nose. I got a Scottish Terrier. I'll tell you, he knows the difference. We underestimate our animals so many times. But Chaser isn't the only dog that does unique things. I know if you watched the Rose Parade, you saw Tillman. Now, Tillman is the world's fastest skateboarding dog. He was the runt in a litter of bulldogs, and he rose above his limitations to take top dog by covering 100 meters in 19.678 seconds in a 2010 competition. And the owners are living in Southern California. All of the family members skate. So Tillman started imitating them. And at first, he'd push his skateboard around, and one day he jumped on, and after that, you couldn't get him off. He's 6 years old, he has his own website, and as I told you, they have him as a regular in the Rose Bowl Parade. I believe he's been in for 2 years. He's just adorable, and so are all of the other ones that are participating on that float in the Rose Bowl Parade. So those are just a couple of fun stories. Now, I've got a recipe for you that is absolutely awesome. This is the time of year when many of us enjoy seafood. Well, shrimp is a favorite of so many. My husband's absolute favorite recipe with shrimp, because otherwise he doesn't like seafood very much, it's coconut shrimp. Whenever he finds it on a menu, that's the one thing he'll order. He just loves it, especially if it's served with an orange marmalade. Well, how would you like to have a coconut shrimp recipe that is going to be one that's guilt-free? Well, let me share it with you. It's real quick. You take a quarter of a cup of Fiber One Original Brand cereal, quarter of a cup, a third of a cup of shredded sweetened coconut. You're going to 3 tablespoons of panko breadcrumbs and a quarter of a teaspoon of chili powder, an eighth of a teaspoon of garlic powder, an eighth of a teaspoon of pepper. You're going to need just a dash of salt. And then you're going to need about 12 ounces of large shrimp. They need to be peeled, tails removed, and deveined. And then you should have 3 tablespoons of fat-free liquid egg substitute. And if you're not into the fat-free, just beat up an egg and you'll use that. Now what you're going to do is preheat your oven to 400 degrees. You place your cereal food storage bag and remove as much air as possible, seal it, and then crush it. And if you have a grinder, just put that in the grinder, go zip, and you got it ready. Then you're going to add mixture, your coconut, your breadcrumbs, your chili powder, garlic powder, pepper and salt to the bag, seal it and shake it. Got it all mixed up. That just takes you a few seconds. And then put the mixture in a large plate. You're going to coat a baking sheet with some cooking spray. Pat your shrimp with paper towels to make sure they're good and dry. Then you put your shrimp with your egg substitute in a bowl and toss it lightly to coat. Or you can just use a regular beaten egg, or a couple of them if you need. One at a time, you shake the excess egg from the shrimp, transfer it to the coconut crumb mixture. You pat it gently, make sure it's coated thoroughly, and then you place your coated shrimp on your baking sheet and bake until it's nice and crispy outside and lightly browned. Insides are cooked through. It takes about 10 to 12 minutes. Yum. Now, what I would suggest is that you take a piece of parchment. If you don't want to have a lot of cleanup, then just put parchment paper down and put your shrimp on that. And it will just be scrumptious. Take a little bit of orange marmalade or whatever your favorite dipping sauce would be, but just serve whatever you want with it. Oh, it is so good. Perfect for that summer light dinner. This is Donna Sebo. We are out of time. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Thank you so much for being with me today. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about how you can dare to change your job and your life. Donna Sebo here. Bye for now.
As we journey beyond the edge, identity shift and boundaries fade, exploding Buddha mask promenade, lives redefined in this masquerade. Speaks of
truth we create a sacred space. Guided by the light, we all are one. And every heart we touch embraces all. Here